I want to dedicate this shiur, as usual, Ilui Nishnat Horai, my parents, Yisrael Chaim Ben Rachel the Abraham, Faigalea Bat Abraham Yaakov Nechaya, and my in-laws, Mordechai Menachem Ben Yaakov Lipa HaKohen, and Leah Bat or some other in their checkbooks or in different kind of places, you find these little bits of paper that have things written on it, and suddenly your parent, your grandparent, or whoever it may be, a relative, a world opens up that you didn't even know about them. So I'd like for everyone to pretend today to find some pieces of paper from Yirmiyahu. That is, I'd like to look at not the book of Yirmiyahu, as I'm sure many of you have learned it, but rather, in a unique way, I selected some psukim, some verses, and we are going to pretend as if we've been sifting through Yirmiyahu, our father, our grandfather, our uncle, and we find these bits of paper that suddenly illuminate for us who he really was. So I'm not talking history. I'm not talking dates. I'm not talking political situations. But I'm talking about the Navi, the prophet, Yirmiyahu. And you'll see why I called it, I am a rock, I am an island, the song from Simon and Garfunkel. As I went through the Siddur of Yirmiyahu, stuck inside the ceremony of the Brit Milah, I found a piece of paper. I hope you're coming along with me on this journey. And the piece of paper was your first, from Perek 1, Chapter 1, is your first source, that said the following. בטרם אצרחה בבטן ידעתיך, ובטרם תצא מרחם הקדשתיך, נביא לגויים נתתיך. Although Hashem said this to Yirmiyahu, we're going to pretend that this is something that Yirmiyahu wrote down. And what it reflects is the fact that he felt his life was predetermined, destined, that he really had no free will in what was going to happen to him. And the way he says it is, God already chose me before I was even born in the womb of my mother. What freedom did I have? Did he ask me if I want to be a Navi? There's something very unfair how my life began. And if that wasn't enough, notice he refers to the Jews here, Lagoyim. Yes, it could be that I was a prophet for nations, all people. But let's say he's talking about the Jews. God chose me, Hashem chose me, Navi Lagoyim. Those people who at the time that he was a Navi were behaving like non-Jews. Where's my free will? Yirmiyahu was saying. And what about my parents? They must have had to do something. My mother's pregnancy was probably not ordinary. And it's interesting because we do know that his parents, like the parents of Shimshon, have to be extremely cautious with things of Tumah. That is, they had to be very careful in purity. Very much like the parents of Shimshon staying away from dead carcasses and in terms of drinking wine and other things that a Nazir has. And he's sort of reflecting, what did my parents have to go through? What did my mother have to go through? How fair was it to them? And suddenly, this Navi that we view as just a tool of God, through this pasuk, reveals to us some of the feelings he had at the very onset, before he even opened his mouth. And so let's look at the second pasuk, which I think I found stuck in Yigdal. And why do I say stuck in the Shacharit of Yigdal? Because in Yigdal it says, Lo kam b'Yisrael ke Moshe od. There was no other prophet like Moshe. And you'll see in a minute why he feels that connection. And says the Navi, V'omar Hashem, aha, Hashem. Exactly what, exactly that. Hinei lo yadati daber kinar onoch. I don't know how to talk. I don't know how to speak. I don't know how to be an orator. I'm so young. Again, it could be, we don't know how old he was. It could be he was young. But it could be that he felt very inexperienced, as Moshe did when he was chosen by the snare, by the burning bush. His reaction was, Mi anochi ki elech l'paro? Who am I to go to Paro? I have a speech impediment, aral svatayim anochi. They're not going to listen to me. And so Yirmiyahu very much could have felt like Moshe, realizing that he was really not prepared for this ominous job that was about to, that was falling upon him. But he was reassured by Hashem, as we know in Perek Aleph, and he accepted his job. He accepted his mission, unlike Moshe that argued back and forth five different arguments. But yet he still felt the connection. He still felt that frustration of, why me? I got the wrong person. I can't do this. So, as we look into the third pasuk, I found this in Birkat HaMazon, because it talks about eating. And what is Yirmiyahu saying here? He's sort of taking a step back and saying to himself, wow, I'm a Navi. I got chosen to be the channel, the pipeline of Hashem. And so he says, Nimtzu'u dvarecha ve'ochlem. When you started to speak to me, when you put the words in my mouth, I ate them like a hungry person. I swallowed them up. I accepted them. I wanted them. And I was happy. They made me happy. And my heart was happy. Why? Because I had your name on me. I was Navi Hashem. I was chosen to speak for you. How could I not be happy? So this is the flip side. And perhaps had we not looked at this pasuk alone, we would not think this of Yirmiyahu. We always think of Yirmiyahu as the Navi of the Khurban, of the destruction. We just read last night Echa, and which was written by Yirmiyahu. Elie Wiesel calls him the raging prophet. And he talks only about destruction. Where would we get a sense, if we didn't find this little piece of paper, where he reveals to us that he was excited, he was happy, even though at first he was hesitant. But what happened? I did not give you the following chapter, which I found amongst his clothing. It's a long chapter, and I cannot believe it. And it's very interesting that he's revealing this to us. Hashem did not let him do three things that we do all the time. One, he was forbidden to get married. Never allowed to get married and have children. Two, he wasn't allowed to go comfort the mourners. And three, he was not allowed to participate in any smachot, a chasana, a brit milah, a pidyon haben, or anything like that. For those of you who want to look into it, this is Perek Tetzayin, chapter 16, and it reveals after each isur, each thing that he was forbidden, it says the reason why. But think about it. He can't get married, he can't have children. He can't pay a shivakor, he can't go to chasanas. How are people going to react to him? What's wrong with him? Weirdo. He's not like one of us. I'm not sitting next to him in shul. You could just imagine how he was ostracized. But if you want to put all of them together, we can also say that he viscerally lived the destiny of Am Yisrael. Because what happened to the Jewish people later on in his prophetic time was exactly this. They died, they didn't get married, they didn't have children. There were so many people who died in the Churban, there was no going paying the Shiva call, there was just humongous amount. So it is said that the reason that he was given, one of the reasons, these three Isurim, these three things that he was forbidden, was because he lived their destiny. How sad. And so I found out what his favorite song was. Paul Simon's and Simon Garfunkel, I Am a Rock. A winter's day in a deep and dark December, I am alone. Looking from my window to the streets below on a freshly fallen silent shroud of snow, I am a rock. I am an island. I've built walls, a fortress deep and mighty that none may penetrate. I have no need of friendship. Friendship causes pain. It's laughter and loving I disdain. I'm a rock. I'm an island. I have my books and my poetry to protect me. I am shielded in my armor, hiding in my room, safe within my womb. I touch no one and no one touches me. I'm a rock. I'm an island. And a rock feels no pain. And an island never thrives. So if we look into our fourth, our chapter 9, source, the words that I just read, I didn't read all of them, certainly reflect the feeling that he expresses here. And whether you're a parent or you worked at a job or you're a child of a parent or a student, you felt this. I wish I had a hotel in a desert. I'm going to run away. Bad translation. I'm very anti the English translation, so that's why I'm doing my own translation. As I'm supposed to see, it doesn't quite match. Malone is not necessarily it is a lodging place, but it's really a hotel. I want to run away to the desert. I don't want to be with these people. These people are, they call them adulterers here, but it could be people who are betraying me, which I'll talk in a minute. You can't trust them. They stab you in the back. They talk about you. They want to switch places with you. They want to get rid of you. I don't want to be with these people. I just want to run away. I just want to be by myself. I feel like, says Yirmiyahu in Perek Yud Aleph, Perek 11, chapter 11. Va'ani kekeves aluf yuval litvoach. I'm like a sheep brought to slaughter. And just as an aside, this verse is used by the Christian missionaries in particular, who read this verse, what we say Christologically, and say that this verse is about Yeshu. I feel uncomfortable with our own Kodesh behind me. That this is describing in the Old Testament what was done to him. No such thing, because if you read this perek, it's about Yirmiyahu, what he feels was done to him, or he's talking about the collective Jewish nation. He says, I feel like a sheep. That's a little sheep, a little lamb, is being taken to slaughter, being held by the person who owns him, or perhaps being led by the person who owns. What does the little sheep think, or the lamb? Oh, yay, I'm walking with my master. I'm going for a walk. It's so nice outside, the sun is shining. He has no clue where he's going, that he's going to be slaughtered. He's walking happily. He's excited. He says, I felt like that because I didn't know that they were people who were trying to poison me, which they did. People who were trying to kill me. He was thrown into a pit with mud, or what we call quicksand, almost died there. He was put into stockades, you know, those pieces of wood with your head and your foot. And then people tried to just totally eliminate him. I had no idea. In fact, it says some of the people were the people he lived with. He lived in Anatot, a little northeast of Jerusalem. Today is Antata, an Arab village. I had no idea. This is what they wanted to do to me. I don't believe it. And so he concludes by saying the following. Arur hayom asher yuladeti bo. Cursed be the day that I was conceived. Yom asher yuladetani imi al yehi baruch. The day that my mother gave birth to me should not be blessed. He feels... very unusual for Navi, by the way, to curse. Chapter 20. He curses the moment he was conceived. He curses the day he was born. He feels, why? Why did I have to be, period? Why was I? Why was I born? For this? It's so painful to read these feelings. And I think many times when we learn about Nevi'im, prophets, we don't get to know them. We learned as students their Nevu'ot, their prophecies, depending on your teacher, you might have been very dry, you mean read the Pasuk, then you explain it word for word and whatever. But really, do you get to put the person into a life that maybe you could understand, a living human being? What was he really like? What were some of the frustrations? And was he happy doing what he was doing? Because remember, a Navi, as I began, had no choice. The minute he was chosen, he was the peh, the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he had to speak whatever he had to say. How do we know that? Because Yonah, for example, tried to run away. What happened? To no avail. You couldn't run away. Could you imagine if whatever career you have or whatever you're doing, you cannot change? I mean, some of we don't want to, but if you didn't have that choice, that freedom, what kind of a life is this? And what I personally find very, what should I say, touches me very much, is the fact that he didn't feel he had the support at all of the people. And in fact, they were always looking to either physically get rid of him or to say something bad about him to the king so the king would look at him differently. He never knew who he was talking to, what they were thinking, and what's the next step they're doing. Could you imagine living in a community like that where you can't trust your next door neighbor? You think they're friendly, you think they're smiling, they're inviting you over, and the next minute they're going to either tattletale or do something behind your back? Horrible. And the fact that he had no one, no wife, no children, makes his life really, really so sad. I think it's important to keep in mind that Yirmiyahu, although is the Navi of the Churban, the prophet of the destruction, he's the Navi who wrote Echa, he's the Navi who wrote Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu, the book of Melachim, Kings, and yet, some of the most beautiful psukim that we sing, that are so comforting, come out of his mouth. So although his whole persona, I think the way I presented it, was really very sad and very painful, there must have been something in him that still flickered and still what had some optimism. What am I referring to? There's the couple of chapters, they begin with the 30, Lamed, Lamed Aleph, Lamed Gimel, Lamed Bet, Lamed Gimel, 3, actually. The one that's familiar to most of us, and hopefully this year even more so as we get there, is the Haftorah we say the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And that's Perek Lamed Aleph, chapter 31 in Yirmiyahu, which begins, and now I'm going to really date myself. Anyone still remember the Miami Boys? Okay, someone. The parak begins with Karma Hashem Matzachem Bamidbar Amsri Decharem, and I remember they sang this song many moons ago. It's a love song the pasuk is a love, Hashem's love for Am Yisrael. And that parak, the same parak, has the following words, which you all know: Kol Berama Nishma Rachel Mevakal Baneha. That Rachel is crying. Okay, that's the sad part. But then you have Vishavu Banim Lingulam, and we are going to return to our borders, which is Eretz Yisrael. And then for some of you who either sing this Shalosh Shuvos, as it was my father's custom, Olav Shalom, or any other time, Haben Yakeli Ephraim Yelet Shashuim Kimidei Davribo Zachar Eskerenu. So one of the most beautiful, several beautiful psukim come right out of the book of Yirmiyahu, which is very, very interesting. And so it doesn't leave us totally depressed. Elie Wiesel, in his book, The Five Biblical Portraits, says the following, that Yirmiyahu was the penultimate survivor. He lived before the Churban, destruction of the temple. He lived through the destruction of the temple, and then survived. We don't know what happened to him. There's all kinds of midrashim. Some say he went to Mitzrayim and he died there. Egypt, never yet. And if you want another little tragedy of it, Rabbi Schiffman today talked about it. He talked about the house of Eli. So if you remember Eli, the Kohen, from the time of Shmuel, he was punished that his sons would die and that they would be poor. And basically the kahuna would go from his family to another. So Yirmiyahu, who was a Kohen, comes from the family of Eli. And therefore he was a Kohen, but not really. Meaning he couldn't work in the Beit HaMikdash, and so he had no parnasah. He had no money, and he was from a low class of Kohanim. So people looked down on that too. Those Kohanim who were Kohanim, but not really, lived in Anatot, which is where Yirmiyahu was born. So the fact that he survived through all this and lived through this, and thought he could prevent it with his nevuot, really leaves him to be, I guess the tragic figure that we usually see him as, the way we usually envision him. So I want to conclude by wishing everyone that may Hashem fulfill the nechamot, the comforts of the Shavu Banim L'Gvulam, that we should all return in Yeretz Hashem to Eretz Yisrael, and fulfill these beautiful words of comfort the same way that he has unfortunately fulfilled the negative prophecies of Yirmiyahu. Thank you very much. Quick question.
Where in particular reason 1:15, then 9?
Okay, no, the book of Yirmiyahu is not chronological, it's thematic, and so it doesn't matter how you... It's thematic in a certain way also, so don't pay no attention. It's more of how I wanted it to flow.